Hi, I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. From New York, this is Democracy Now!
President Trump has been focused ever since he's been in office on making America safe again. And that is what my job is as a secretary, is to make sure that we're following through on exactly what he promised the American people. To make sure that we're going after the worst of the worst every single day, get the murderers, the rapists, the child pedophiles and pornographers off of our streets and out of this country.
As the Trump administration vows to arrest up to now 7,000 immigrants a day, we'll speak with an attorney who represents a six-year-old boy from Honduras with leukemia, together with his nine-year-old sister and mother, taken after an immigration hearing. As ICE moves to deny bond to those jails and nearly double its capacity to detain 100,000 people, we'll look at a new report. You feel like your life is over. Abusive practices at three Florida immigration detention centers since January 2025.
Looking at three of these detention facilities in Florida, where people are surviving mass overcrowding, lack of access to basic hygiene, and complete, in some cases, lack of access to appropriate medical care, which in at least two cases might have actually led to the deaths of detainees.
And finally, as the federal government begins to implement some $1 trillion in Medicaid cuts, a new documentary examines the moral dilemmas and profit motives surrounding assisted dying that members of the disabled community could face. It's called Life After.
This film is not about suicide. It's about the phenomenon that leaves disabled people desperate to find their place in the world that perpetually rejects them.
We'll speak with acclaimed filmmaker Reed Davenport. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. The World Health Organization has accused Israeli forces of attacking its staff residence and main warehouse in the city of Deir al-Balah in Gaza. On Monday, Israeli forces entered the WHO premises and handcuffed, stripped, interrogated male staffers and family members. One WHO staff member remains in detention. So far today, Israeli forces have killed at least 43 Palestinians, including 10 aid seekers. Israel killed another 60 Palestinians on Monday. This comes as the health ministry in Gaza says at least 15 more people, including four children, have died due to famine and malnutrition over the past 24 hours. Michael Fakhry, the UN Special Rapporteur on the Right to Food, told Al Jazeera, quote, "What we're seeing now in Gaza is the most horrific stage of Israel's starvation campaign." This is Maltaz Harar, the head of the emergency department at Al-Shifa Hospital.
Most patients admitted to the hospital recently are not suffering from war injuries, but from severe malnutrition. Even some of our medical workers have fainted from lack of food. The situation is grave, but it's not new. It's just that the number of cases is rising rapidly lately.
The union representing reporters at the French press agency, Agence France-Presse, AFP, is warning the agency staff in Gaza are in danger of starving to death. In an open letter, the union writes, quote, "Since AFP was founded in August 1944, we've lost journalists in conflicts, we've had wounded and prisoners in our ranks, but none of us can recall seeing a colleague die of hunger. We refuse to see them die," unquote. 28 countries, including Canada and Britain, have issued a call for an immediate end to Israel's war on Gaza. During a speech to Parliament on Monday, British Foreign Secretary David Lammy condemned Israel's militarized aid system in Gaza, noting almost 1,000 civilians have been killed while seeking food since May.
The new Israeli aid system is inhumane, it's dangerous, and it deprives Gazans of human dignity. It contradicts long-established humanitarian principles. It creates disorder Hamas is now exploiting, with distribution points reduced from 400 to just 4. It forces desperate civilians, children among them, to scramble unsafely for the essentials of life. It's a grotesque spectacle, wreaking a terrible human cost.
In more news on Gaza, authorities in Belgium have arrested two Israeli soldiers following a war crimes complaint filed by the Hind Rajab Foundation and the Global Legal Action Network. A federal judge in Kentucky Monday sentenced former Louisville police officer Brett Hankison to 33 months in prison for using excessive force during the deadly police raid that killed Breonna Taylor in her own home. U.S. District Judge Rebecca Grady Jennings rejected the Justice Department's recommendation to have Hankison sentenced to just one day in prison. That was the prosecution recommending that, calling the effort not appropriate. Hankison fired 10 bullets during the no-knock raid in March 2020, some of which penetrated the walls of a neighbor's home where a family was sleeping. Taylor was a Black 26-year-old emergency room technician whose killing in 2020 sparked nationwide racial justice protests under the banner Black Lives Matter. Civil rights attorney Ben Crump spoke after Monday's sentencing.
Breonna Taylor killing 5 years later is telling us a lot at which direction we're going to go. Are we going to continue to be a democracy that upholds the objective of liberty and justice for all? Or are we going to descend into being a police state where the police can do anything?
Louisville Metro Police arrested four protesters who blocked traffic outside the federal court where Hankison was sentenced on Monday. Among those arrested was Bianca Austin, Breonna Taylor's aunt. A warning to our audience, the following story contains graphic footage of police violence. In Florida, Jacksonville Sheriff T.K. Waters said Monday, none of the officers involved in the violent arrest and beating of 22-year-old Black motorist William Anthony McNeil Jr. will face criminal charges. The beating occurred February 19th after Jacksonville Sheriff's office deputies pulled McNeil over for driving without his headlights on, even though it was daytime and not even raining. Now viral cell phone video shows McNeil posing no threat to officers as he questioned why they'd pulled him over. An officer then breaks McNeil's window and punches him in the face before officers drag him from the car, throw him to the ground, and begin pummeling him.
Exit the vehicle now. Yeah. Exit the vehicle. Show me your hands.
Here.
I'm here. What is your reason, sir?
Step out.
What is your reason?
Step out now.
All right.
McNeil says he suffered a chipped tooth that pierced his cheek, requiring stitches, a concussion, and short-term memory loss. Jacksonville's branch of the NAACP called the video disturbing, adding, quote, this troubling behavior from law enforcement highlights the very reasons why many African-Americans, especially African-American men, feel fear during traffic stops. The Pentagon says it's withdrawing 700 U.S. Marines from Los Angeles after their unprecedented deployment in June as the Trump administration sought to crack down on protests that erupted after a wave of ICE raids in Southern California. Nearly 2,000 National Guard troops remain in Los Angeles. Mayor Karen Bass has accused the Trump administration of fomenting chaos and making L.A. a test case for authoritarian rule in U.S. cities. ICE agents in South Florida have detained the prominent Haitian entrepreneur, Dr. Pierre Reginald Bulos. He was born in the United States, but renounced his U.S. citizenship to run for president of Haiti. ICE accused him of being, quote, engaged in a campaign of violence and gang support that contributed to Haiti's destabilization, unquote. Bulos is being held at the Chrome Detention Center. On Monday, Secretary of State Marco Rubio announced the Trump administration will begin deporting U.S. lawful permanent residents who have ties to Vivre Ensemble, a Haitian armed group that was recently labeled a terrorist organization by the Trump administration. Democratic attorneys general from 20 states in Washington, D.C. sued the Trump administration Monday, seeking to restore undocumented immigrants' access to federal health and safety net programs. Their complaint, filed in U.S. District Court in Rhode Island, alleges the Trump administration violated administrative law when it cut off immigrants' access to programs, including Head Start, mental health services in schools, 24/7 crisis hotlines, and shelters for people lacking housing. A new analysis by the nonpartisan Congressional Budget Office finds President Trump's new tax and spending bill will add $3.4 trillion to the national debt over the next decade. The CBO's updated forecast also expects the legislation to cause some 10 million people across the U.S. to lose health insurance by 2034. A federal judge has ordered the Trump administration to restore a website showing how the Office of Management and Budget directs agencies to spend congressionally appropriated funds. CRU, that's Citizens for Responsibility and Ethics, which sued the OMB and its director, Russell Vogt, for taking down the website, celebrated the ruling, writing, quote, contrary to the Trump administration's absurd arguments, it's not unconstitutional for Congress to require the executive branch to be transparent, unquote. House Speaker Mike Johnson's reversed his call for the Justice Department to release information about the dead serial sex trafficker Jeffrey Epstein, who was a longtime friend of Donald Trump's. On Monday, Johnson ruled out any votes on measures related to the Justice Department's trove of files on Epstein before the House leaves Washington at the end of the week for its planned August recess. Johnson said President Trump and his administration need space.
My belief is we need the administration to have the space to do what it is doing. And if further congressional action is necessary or appropriate, then we'll look at that.
That's a reversal from the House Speaker's statement just days earlier when he joined calls from Trump's MAGA base and House Democrats for the Justice Department to release everything it has on Epstein.
It's a very delicate subject, but we should put everything out there and let the people decide it.
On Monday, the White House said it's removing the Wall Street Journal from press seats on President Trump's upcoming trip to Scotland. The move comes after Trump filed a $10 billion lawsuit against the Journal, its parent company, and its owner, Rupert Murdoch, and the two reporters who broke the story that Trump wrote a bawdy birthday card, including a sketch of a naked woman, to an album for Epstein's 50th birthday. Accompanying the sketch was Trump's note to Epstein, quote, happy birthday and may every day be another wonderful secret, unquote. The Trump administration's released over 240,000 pages of FBI records on Martin Luther King Jr. and his assassination, despite opposition from King's children. In a statement, the King family said, quote, the release of these files must be viewed within their full historical context. During our father's lifetime, he was relentlessly targeted by an invasive, predatory, and deeply disturbing disinformation and surveillance campaign. They talked about the campaign against King by the longtime FBI director J. Edgar Hoover. And a federal judge appears likely to side with Harvard in its lawsuit against the Trump administration for stripping $2.6 billion in research funding to the university. During a pivotal hearing on Monday, Judge Allison Burroughs said the constitutional consequences of the Trump administration's actions could be staggering. The Trump administration has claimed Harvard has done not done enough to combat anti-Semitism, but Judge Burroughs called the government claims mind-boggling. She noted she is Jewish and questioned the relationship between cutting funding for cancer research and ending anti-Semitism. Trump reacted to the hearing by attacking the judge, saying she's a, quote, total disaster. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. When we come back, as the Trump administration vows to arrest up to 7,000 immigrants to a day, we'll speak with an attorney who represents a six-year-old boy from Honduras with leukemia. He, his nine-year-old sister, and his mother were detained for 2 months by ICE. They've just been released. Stay with us.
Sola voy con mi pena, sola va mi condena. Correr es mi destino para burlar la ley. Perdida en el corazón de la grande Babilón. Me dicen clandestino por no llevar papel. Soy una raya en el mar, fantasma en la ciudad. Mi vida va prohibida, dice la autoridad.
¿Qué será de nosotros si no pensamos en los niños?
Lila Downs performing Manu Chao's Clandestino in our Democracy Now! Studio. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman. We begin today's show looking at how the Trump administration's pushing ahead on its aggressive quota of as many as 7,000 daily immigration arrests, up from 3,000. Homeland Security Secretary Kristi Noem spoke Friday at a news conference in Nashville, Tennessee.
President Trump has been focused ever since he's been in office on making America safe again. And that is what my job is as a secretary, is to make sure that we're following through on exactly what he promised the American people, to make sure that we're going after the worst of the worst every single day, get the murderers, the rapists, the child pedophiles and pornographers off of our streets and out of this country.
The worst of the worst. But according to figures from ICE itself, that were obtained by the Cato Institute, over 93% of immigrants arrested this fiscal year were never convicted of any violent offense. Still, Congress approved some $45 billion to expand ICE's immigration detention capacity, including the jailing of families and children. We begin today's show with a story of one Los Angeles family arrested after they dutifully showed up at their immigration hearing. They were then taken to a family detention center in Dilley, Texas, that Trump reopened. On May 29th, plainclothes ICE agents detained a six-year-old boy from Honduras who had acute lymphoblastic leukemia, along with a nine-year-old sister and their mother, as they left their immigration court hearing in which their asylum case was dismissed, even though they'd followed every rule of the immigration process. In detention, the boy missed a key doctor's appointment, disrupting his cancer treatment. The family also said his sister cried every night, afraid. As pressure grew over their conditions, the family was released on July 2nd. An ICE spokesperson claimed, quote, any implications that ICE would deny a child proper medical care are false, unquote. For more, we're joined by Ilora Mukherjee, an attorney who represents the boy and his family. She's a professor of law and director of the Immigrants' Rights Clinic at Columbia Law School. Thanks so much for joining us from Columbia. Ilora, tell us the story of this young family and the six-year-old boy with leukemia.
Thank you for having me, Amy. So this is a family that did everything right. While they were in Honduras, they faced imminent, menacing death threats. The family then fled to the United States, but they didn't cross the border unlawfully, illegally. Instead, they waited in Mexico until they had an appointment through the CBP One app to enter the United States. They showed up at exactly the date and time that they were assigned by the U.S. government. And at that point, the Department of Homeland Security paroled the family into the United States, necessarily finding that the family posed no danger to the community and no flight risk. The family then integrated into their community in Los Angeles. The kids were enrolled in school. The family attended church every Sunday. The little boy loved playing soccer in the park with his friends. And they did everything right. They had never been accused or charged with any crime anywhere in the world, not in the United States. And then, as you said, they dutifully showed up to their immigration court hearing on May 29th, 2025. That was a routine immigration court hearing. All three of them went. And at the hearing, the mom explained to the immigration judge that she wished to continue with their asylum cases. But DHS moved to dismiss those cases. The immigration judge quickly granted the department's motion to dismiss the cases without giving the family the time that they are entitled to under the relevant rules to explain their opposition to the motion to dismiss. And as soon as the immigration judge granted the motion to dismiss, the family stepped out of the courtroom, and there they were met by men dressed in civilian clothing, ICE officers who arrested them and detained them, told them they couldn't go home, told them they couldn't make a phone call. The family was first detained in the courtroom, in the courthouse itself, and then they were taken to a immigration processing center in Los Angeles. There, the family was held overnight, not given adequate food. And while the family was there, an ICE officer lifted his shirt, which displayed a gun. This terrified the little boy. He urinated on himself. He was left in wet clothing for hours overnight until the family was put on a flight to Texas the next day. Then they were detained for over a month. And throughout that month, I repeatedly begged the Department of Homeland Security to release this family. The department didn't do so. That is why, with co-counsel, I filed a federal habeas petition on behalf of the family. And we are all extremely grateful that the family was released earlier this month.
So they were held for just over a month. You have an ICE spokesperson claiming any implications ICE would deny a child proper medical care are false. Elora, can you explain? Can you respond to what that person said?
The mom of this young boy was terrified throughout their time in detention that he wasn't receiving appropriate medical care. He showed signs of easy bruising. He lost his appetite. He had occasional bone pain. He and his sister cried every night and prayed to God that God would let them out of this detention center. And this connects to a broader theme. Right now, there are hundreds of families who are detained at the Dilley Immigrant Processing Center in Texas. And for asylum-seeking families and children, detention is just not appropriate. All the major medical associations, the American Academy of Pediatrics, the American Medical Association, the American Psychiatric Association, and other medical organizations have condemned the use of family detention for immigrant children who are seeking asylum, because even brief periods of detention can have long-lasting mental health effects on the children who are affected. Taking this particular family, it's worth noting that although they've been released from detention, the children are still facing the consequences of their month of detention. The little boy doesn't want to leave his home. He's terrified. He sobs, cries, and screams when his mother takes him out of the house. The 9-year-old girl lost her appetite while she was in detention, and she's still not eating properly. And their mom is trying to get both kids the medical care that they now need as a result of their time in detention.
You worked on the Flores settlement. Trump is trying to get rid of it. What is the significance of this, that children aren't supposed to be held for more than a number of days?
Yes, that's exactly right, Amy. The Flores Settlement Agreement was reached in 1997. It has two basic components. First, it guarantees children in federal immigration custody basic minimal protections. Access to adequate water, access to adequate food, access to basic sanitary conditions during their detention. And two, it prioritizes the release of children as promptly as possible from detention in recognition that detention is not appropriate for children who are seeking asylum, survivors of trauma. And the Trump administration has moved to terminate the Flores Settlement Agreement, leaving children with no protections in federal immigration custody at a time when $45 billion have been allocated for immigration detention, including for the detention of immigrant families.
What happens to the family now as we wrap up?
For this particular family, they will continue to fight for their right to stay in the United States. They're pursuing humanitarian relief, specifically asylum. They have a strong asylum claim. And if they are given a fair opportunity to present their case, I hope that they are able to stay in the United States and continue to make contributions to this country.
Ilora Mukherjee, I want to thank you for being with us, professor of law at Columbia Law School, director of the Immigrants' Rights Clinic there. We turn now to plans by Immigration and Customs Enforcement, ICE, to nearly double ICE's detention capacity to 100,000 people. ICE is reportedly racing to build more than more detention tent camps after Congress allocated an unprecedented $45 billion in new funding over the next 4 years to lock up immigrants as part of Trump's massive tax and spending package. The Homeland Security Department is also reportedly preparing to start detaining immigrants at more military bases, including in New Jersey and Indiana, as well as to transfer more immigrants to the U.S. Naval Base at Guantanamo, Cuba. That's according to NPR, which says Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth approved the plans earlier this month. As ICE jails across the country face dangerous overcrowding amidst nationwide mass raids, the Trump administration is now moving to revoke access to bond hearings for people who entered the U.S. through non-approved channels. The new policy could potentially impact millions of undocumented people and orders officers to detain immigrants for the length of their removal proceedings, a process which can take months or even years. The rule will apply to people who've recently entered the U.S., as well as immigrants who've been living here for decades. From where we go to Washington, D.C., where we're joined by Adriela Rosco, Senior Policy Counsel at the American Immigration Council. Welcome to Democracy Now! What does denying bond mean?
It means that, unfortunately, you know, people who have been living in the United States for decades will have to fight their cases behind bars. We know that these detention centers have histories of medical neglect, of horrific conditions, and malnutrition. And so we know that this is one more tool that the Trump administration is trying to use to really scare the community and to get people to give up on their cases, because people do not want to remain behind bars during the duration of the removal proceedings, like you said, can take years.
So it will discourage people from continuing to fight their immigration and asylum cases and going through the legal process.
Yeah, that's right. You know, I've had clients in the past who have had to stay in detention centers for 3 months at a time, and they've decided that they would rather accept a removal order because they don't have access to be able to talk to their family, or sometimes it's really difficult to even talk to their attorneys. And the conditions inside, it's freezing. Right now, we know that at least a fourth of the immigrant detention centers in the country, at least of April, using ICE's data, were overcrowded. And so people are not getting enough to eat. People are having to sleep on floors. And so it's pretty horrific what people are having to experience right now in detention centers.
The American Immigration Lawyers Association said members had reported immigrants were being denied bond hearings in more than a dozen immigration courts across the country, including New York, Ohio, Georgia, North Carolina, Oregon, Virginia. Can you talk about what this means?
Yeah. And so, you know, one of the most troubling aspects of this likely unconstitutional memo is that, you know, usually when a person who goes before an immigration judge and is in detention, they can ask for a bond. They can show the immigration judge that they're not a flight risk or that they're not a public safety threat. And we know that a majority of individuals in immigrant detention right now don't have a criminal conviction. And so, unfortunately, what that means is that many of them will not have the opportunity to go before an immigration judge.